Today, digital assets, what's going on? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to Earth is Post, covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Today, I'm joined by the CEO of BTC Markets, Caroline Bowler. Hello.
Hello, how's it going?
Yeah, pretty good. Thanks very much for spending some time with us. And boy, there's a lot to talk about.
Absolutely. I think that one of the things that's happening at the moment in the digital asset space is around regulation. And I think that's always a really interesting topic to kind of delve into a bit deeper.
When we say digital assets, what are we actually talking about?
Well, for me, that's kind of an umbrella term, and cryptocurrencies, which are probably the best known of them, kind of sits underneath that umbrella, and of that, Bitcoin being the best known. So digital assets, though, more broadly, is anything that has been tokenized or digitalized and kind of put on the blockchain or and can be accessed through in that format.
Right. So it can be broader than Bitcoin. I mean, I was talking to somebody the other day who's got a digital gold sort of connection point, right? So effectively, multiple assets can be digitalized, and there are two things that needs to happen. One is there needs to be a mechanism to be able to switch backwards and forwards, and two, to be able to account for it and control it. So those, I think, are the critical elements.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's also, you know, speed, transparency, you know, globalized by its very nature. Yeah, it's fantastic. So that's digital assets, exactly.
Okay. But now the critical issue, of course, is regulation. How much regulation is the right amount of regulation? How much regulation should there be? Of course, you know, some people are saying, well, you know, Bitcoin is completely unregulated and that's the whole point of it. Whereas, of course, perhaps regulation is wanting to sort of knock on the door a bit and say, hang on a moment, there are some limits.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's an awful lot happening in that space, both in Australia and worldwide. But just to kind of set the scene for us, I can give you a bit of insight into the regulation that we're under as a digital asset exchange here in Australia. So as a what's called a spot market, which is a straightforward buy-sell market, we don't sit under any financial regulations as it currently stands. So because Bitcoin is considered, or cryptocurrency is considered, property, so we don't sit under financial. But what we do have an obligation is under AML KYC, which sits under AUSTRAC. So we're registered with AUSTRAC for all of our AML KYC data. We're also with AFCA at the moment as well for financial dispute resolution body. But if we wanted to then look at trading, say, for example, in derivatives or and digital asset derivatives, or such as futures and options and so forth, of which there's a huge market growth opportunity, for that we will need a financial license. And more crucially, for some stable coins, we'll also need a license because they're considered a derivative. So I know for us in BTC Markets, we've always had a rather cautious tone, which I think we've spoken about a few times. And so with that, for us to do any listings, we put all of these coins and tokens through a fairly rigorous due diligence process within a framework that we have ourselves to make sure that it doesn't fall foul of some of those financial obligation requirements, you know, through our own innocence, I suppose. So those are the obligations that we have as an exchange here in Australia, and any exchange in Australia operates under. However, we anticipate that this is a situation that's going to change. More importantly, if you look at it on a global level, there's an organization called the Financial Action Task Force, or FATF, which is a pretty catchy title. And they are an international body which is set up specifically to look after financial crime and the prevention of financial crime. And traditionally, they have been used to regulate financial institutions such as the bank on your high street, etc. And but they go at it from a government level, at a national level, rather than kind of legislating as specific. They leave it up to the countries themselves to devise their own regulation. So, point of the story, FATF have brought out what they call the travel rule, which currently exists for financial institutions, whereby if you want to send money to a bank account, say in Singapore, which is an example I use here, with that, your name, address, your identifier, such as your passport number, your bank account number, etc., those details, that information will travel with the transaction. And up until now, cryptocurrency transactions hadn't had the same obligation. That has now changed. So as of July 2019, I think it was, FANF said, okay, these rules, this travel rule, will now apply to what they call VASPs, which is a catchy title for virtual asset service provider, under which, as a digital currency exchange, that's one of our, we fall under that. So here in Australia, that rule is not yet enacted into law. However, to go back to that Singapore example, Singapore is a bit ahead of the curve, and they've already brought that in as an obligation for any exchange. What that means in practice is that if somebody wants to send digital asset from our exchange to a Singapore exchange, we are now obligated to meet that travel rule. So it's kind of come in, it's come into Australia kind of under the stealth of you. But that's very much, you know, indicative of digital assets anyway. It is by its very nature globalized, and we can kind of expect to see that come through. And on the other side of that, though, we've also looking at a recent report that's just come out of Europe, which I think is really exciting. It was the European Parliament's research service have brought out what they call a European added value assessment, all these catchy titles. And with that, they look at a situation, say, for example, digital assets. They look at the current legislation as it sits on the books, and they look for gaps. And they run scenarios where they devise policies around these gaps and then do a cost-benefit analysis, both quantitative and qualitative. And this most recent report, which came out, I think, at the end of last week, start of this week kind of time frame, in it they said, okay, digital assets, or they refer to as crypto assets, are diversifying rapidly. The technology is going at a pelt. The preferences and usage for investors and consumers, likewise, is rapidly expanding. We need to respond. Their point of view was that the lack of legislation around this was a risk. It was a problem for that investor and consumer group, which is a point of view that I generally would agree with. So they took across an assessment, and they identified that there was a lack of a common language, a common framework, if you like, across the European Union when referring to the industry. And like I said, I mean, language like VASPs, I don't know anybody in the industry that calls them a VASP, or, you know, everything differs. So, I mean, and if that's just within my small ecosystem, I can imagine European-wide how much it varies. So they said that's an issue. They also said that cyber resilience, which I know is an issue that's close to our heart here in Australia, it's also been identified by the Australian government, that that's a point that needs to be, policy needs to be devised on. And also just more generally, a comprehensive data strategy that needs to happen, because you're dealing with huge volumes of data, but at lightning speeds as well. Whereas perhaps in the traditional financial services, yes, it absolutely does a lot of data, and it's but the way that has evolved has taken time, whereas we're just coming in at pelt again, as I say. So what they've decided to do with that, they ran a scenario where they said, okay, we're going to, in a scenario where we amend existing financial services legislation for crypto assets, such as Bitcoin, but then we need to do something in their phrase, bespoke legislation for stable coins. And that's kind of a point I'll come back to again, because stable coins seems to be something that is really being closely examined at government level. Anyway, so they put together different scenarios, and it's a quite a detailed report, and I won't go into all the ins and outs of it, but the summary of it is, when they ran these scenarios and they applied these policies into it, they basically saw net win. They looked at it from a quantitative point of view, and they saw at a conservative figure a 44 billion Aussie dollar bounce in financial services, up to a 90 billion Aussie dollar bounce in financial services. But they also looked at it from a qualitative point of view. And then it talked about the protections for consumers, they talked about for investors, they talked about it from the government, from a taxation point of view, from an AML KYC point of view. But they also talked about it at a macro level, about this would create a high skill employment. It would also open up the option, say, for a tokenization of investment for SMEs, but equally for small investors such as myself, your retail investor, would then have access to a far broader range of financial services and choice, which I think is something that you know, we can all agree is a good thing when it comes to financial services. But the need for legislation, the fact that there isn't regulation around this sector, has led to what they've described as a speculative bubble. And so that's the gap that they're now trying to fill. So this EAVA, this really important piece of a potential framework, a roadmap for all of Europe, as I say, just came out. And they're flagging that they're going to have some legislation in place by the end of 2024, which I know seems like, oh, that's ages away, but we've just sleepwalked through 2020. I think we're in any position to think, oh God, that'd be so far away. And it really isn't. And I think we're going to see an increasing amount coming out of Europe of these kind of framing documents, if you like, that are going to let us know, okay, this is the path that they're going to go down. And you know, as I say, if you look at what happened with the travel rule with FATF, while Australia itself hasn't actually put any legislation forward to deal with it, it kind of comes into us anyway. It comes in the back door, and I would imagine that's going to be similar with whatever it is that Europe comes to, you know, as their deciding point of, right, this is what we're going to do, this is how we're going to go forward with it. So really exciting, that one piece alone. So if we take a breath on Europe and then we kind of bring it, as I say, kind of closer to home, the Senator Bragg brought out a RegTech and FinTech interim report. There's a Senate committee, he's the chair of that Senate committee, and they brought out an interim report a couple of weeks ago now, I think, at this stage. And while it doesn't specifically deal with digital assets, I know blockchain technology focused quite heavily throughout that report. And I think overall, it's a very pragmatic piece of, pragmatic report that came out, very forward-looking. It doesn't directly address digital assets, as I say. It does talk about ICOs in terms of tax treatment, but that is a very much kind of niche part of the whole opportunity. But I think it is a very positive and very forward-looking interim report. Final report's not due out until April, so I think we'll probably know more and can kind of pin our hat more on things then. RBA as well brought out its policy statement on CBDCs, some research that it's done on CBDCs. And I know it can be considered to be something of a some people have interpreted their desire to say that general purpose, you know, general case for CBDCs is still to be made, particularly at a retail level, which is fair enough. I mean, they did a comparison between, I think, Sweden, China and Canada and looked at the different cases. And you can't really apply Australia in a one-to-one with any of those countries. They're all vastly different. But they did say that they're kind of keeping a watching brief, if you like, is my interpretation of their conclusion. That is to say they're not ruling it out, but they're not ruling it in for now. So that's kind of like a whistle-stop tour through all the regulation as it stands. But again, what was really interesting to me was again, that the focus around stable coins. And I think we've seen some data that have come out, you know, recently, some other reports that have come out recently about that focus around stablecoins. And for the layperson, a stablecoin would be Facebook's experiment with Libra, where they're looking to use Libra as a payment coin. And I think their point about private entities having that kind of control, both from a data point of view, but also from kind of an economic point of view, puts the cats amongst the pigeons somewhat.
Mm. Well, that was certainly a very, very fine review of all that stuff that's going on, because it's clearly you're across so much. And I think there was three or four observations I'd like to make. The first is know your customer, right, which, of course, has been wired into the traditional financial services sector forever, right, has really now come into digital. And so if you want to actually start transacting digitally, you have to go through that same process. So effectively, identification is now stitched into the processes, right? And so actually, if you're trading Bitcoin, it can be traced back. And that's an important point, because people still think of Bitcoin as totally anonymous. It's not really, is it?
And it never was, because you could always track the transaction through the blockchain.
Yep.
Like that's the whole point of a blockchain. It's so transparent.
Yes.
The anonymity piece is that your name isn't directly attached. Like it doesn't say Bob Jones and Bitcoin as it goes through the. But and the technology exists. We use it in our exchange as many do. To track where, because we're looking for, you know, concerns around illicit bitcoins. We're not tracking the movements of our users. That's not what we use it for. But instead, we're looking to see if there's any illicit cryptocurrency coming into our exchange, of which, thankfully, there's minimal. But so that, as I say, that point of anonymity was always there. That's the whole point of blockchain.
Right.
But I think too that with that KYC piece, though, that's going to be vital to give confidence as this industry moves forward. But sorry, going ahead, you had a point to make.
Yeah. So the second point was on stablecoin. I mean, this is a really important, dilemma, right, for the way that the evolution of digital goes, because, of course, there are coins that have no intrinsic value. It's basically driven just by market. And there are coins like stablecoins, which basically are connected to something, right?
That's right.
And it's probably one of the most fundamental tussles that's going on at the moment as to which way it's going to evolve. And it looks to me as though, for all sorts of reasons, a lot of the weight of the argument is going towards stablecoins now.
Well, I think it's really, you know, there's a case to be made for it. As I said before, like a failure of imagination, lack of imagination to see where this can go. And I know that overnight, out of the US banks are now allowed to custody or to look after the US dollar or the asset amount for stablecoins. So I mean, that the discretion of the bank, and so the discretion of whoever owns is running the stablecoin, where they want to put it, but they could now do it, whereas before that wasn't possible. But they now have clarity around that custody of crypto assets, which is really key. I mean, all these things are quite, in and of themselves, small milestones, but the speed at which all these milestones are being hit kind of creates a much bigger ripple effect and a much bigger kind of energy behind the whole sector. Stablecoins are really interesting, simply because you are now going to have the potential for another type of currency outside of national currency. And you're looking then at, well, what is going to, you're reimagining the whole purpose and point of money and what is it to achieve? But more importantly, that trust element. I mean, the whole point of national currency is that you're told, if you're holding, say, for example, the US dollar, you know, that this is backed by the US Treasury and that they can stand over it. Same with the Bank of England or the, you know, the Australian RBA, et cetera, et cetera. That's the point. But if you've got your trust then in something like a Facebook or any other kind of data giant or what have you, boy, oh boy, there's a lot of concerns there, both at a government point of view, tax, data privacy, all of those concerns. But where they stand on their own is the fact that they're digitalized, quick, easy, speed of transactions. And if you're looking at like those particularly small micro transactions, as they call them, you know, where you're just buying a cup of coffee, that kind of stuff, that is a use case to be made there. Maybe not necessarily to take over, you know, from what the RBA said. You know, maybe that's not necessarily needed right now because we've got the MPP here and so on, and there is already an infrastructure here. But if you're looking at other countries where they don't necessarily have that advanced structure, it's very appealing, very, very appealing. So I can see why, yeah, there's going to be an almighty tussle. But we don't own, we don't run a stable coin, so we're okay.
Yet. Yeah.
Yet.
Now, one of the other interesting points about the Reserve Bank Bulletin article, which is actually really, frankly, didn't say a whole lot of new stuff. It just sort of went over the arguments again. But they did focus more on the consumer end this time and said, look, there's clearly there's a role for central banks, and that is partly to do with, you know, the currency and keeping the currency stable and financial stability. But there's also a role for, you know, the payment providers, you know, the platform providers. And so they were trying to sort of tease out some of those differences of roles. And the other thing that they made the point, I think, of arguing was, well, you know, you could actually just have a system based on, you know, some sort of account, ledger or something, or it could be tokenized, right? And they were a little bit sort of saying, well, it could be one, could be the other, it could be a combination of the two. Where are you on that particular dimension?
Crumbs, that's so much to, I mean, I think for anyone who's an economist, this is a really exciting time. I mean, this, I'll see your Adam Smith and I'll raise your digitalization of assets. In terms of the ideas that you can, you know, there's a philosophical point to be made with all of this too. Yep. I mean, from my point of view, obviously because of the role I'm in and the nature of the business that I do, I am gung-ho on things like tokenization and the development of it more broadly.
Yep.
But that's not to say it's a one-size-fits-all. And I mean, I do take your point that there's still like ground to be covered here in Australia. But what I think is important is that the conversation is still going. I think that's more what gives me, you know, interest and excitement is the fact that they haven't just turned around. I mean, if you look at what India is trying to do now, where India says that we're going to ban the trading of digital assets. I don't necessarily think that that's the way forward. I think that's probably going to keep you as some kind of quasi status quo. And it's even more remarkable considering how Modi, you know, just shut down low circulation notes overnight and kind of, you know, he got this digital ID and yet they closed down digital assets. It doesn't really kind of tally, but that's for India to just side. But back to Australia, I think the point being that they haven't shut down the conversation and that they are still kind of kicking the tires around on this. That gives me, as I say, that watching brief. Yeah, I'm excited about it. But I mean, you know, who am I to say this is what Australia should do? I mean, I'm just one after my own little piece of the world that I look after. That's up to the guys at the RBA. But the technology, as I said before, like what we see from a technology point of view, we now can settle trades in microseconds. That's the speed that we can settle trades and do settle trades, cross-border trades. We can. That's the speed that this technology can go at. So as opposed to, as anyone who works within, you know, works in traditional banking and can see how long it takes, even the most simple and straightforward inter-Australian banking transfers, how long they take to settle. And then you look at the new paradigm that's coming, you can...
Well, and I don't know whether you noticed this, but in that bulletin article, they did actually refer to the academic research relating to better monetary control in a low interest rate or negative interest rate environment if it's digital, right? So there, that was an interesting observation, thinking, okay, so, you know, maybe digital currency, negative interest rates, monetary control, those are all things that the central bank is thinking about.
Well, monetary control, that, as far as I can remember, dusting back my economics 101, isn't monetary control something that we threw out back in like the 70s or something? I thought we got rid of that a long time ago. So it'd be interesting to see how that plays out. But the whole piece around digital currency, digital assets and or digital currency more specifically, and negative interest rates is a topic that is kind of the topic du jour amongst many in the crypto globally now, because this is a global economic environment that we're talking about that Australia's tapped into, and it gets discussed quite a bit in within that framework. Now, obviously, I probably can't give a position on that in my current role, but what is telling is the globalized nature of that conversation, so not just specific to here.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think that sort of comes to the end of the conversation in a way, because what we need to understand is that, you know, Australia is not an island here, right? Mm. There is a lot going on internationally. A lot of those bodies have international reach. And the evolutionary speed at which this is moving towards, not sure where yet, but, you know, it's moving pretty fast, is one, very exciting, but also for some, I guess, quite challenging. And I rather feel as though the central banks are sort of trying to catch up. You know, they're on the back of the train, or maybe they're not quite on the train, but they're running fast behind to try and get on the train, right? That's how I see it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm at the very coalface of this. I'm at the front of the engine, pulling on the toot-toot. But even I have difficulty kind of keeping up with so much that comes out every day. And I mean, the reports I have to read and the data I have to process just to keep up with what's happening both here locally in Australia, but also worldwide, you know, with so much moving with decentralized finance and the different regulation points of view that are coming out. But that's my job, and I love it and love to do it. But I think it's... You know, if there's anything I can say to the street investors, the average investor, the me and my dad basically, is the fact that there is legislation being discussed, the fact that regulation is out there and it's being talked about, it's coming through, that can give people a lot of comfort about coming into a sector such as ours. Again, not investment advice, but it's worth exploring and looking at, because where it was 5-10 years ago is not where it's going to be in 3 years' time. Particularly, as I say, if you look at, I mean, if the EU are bringing it in, if America's considering it, you know, join the dots, I think, on that.
No, that's right. And, you know, I often say that it might have been the Wild West some time ago, but right, but it's now becoming Main Street, right? It's evolving very fast. A lot of potential there. And the trick, of course, is to navigate the bear traps, as it were, so that we get the best results for, I guess, individuals and the broader economy. And I do think it's interesting, because there are more central banks now talking more about this, highlighting more of the issues, thinking it through. But I still think there's a bit of a learning curve amongst mainstream bankers with regard to this, because it's all very new and very scary. On the other hand, it is also very exciting. And you can see the potential. Mm-hmm. I mean, I come back to this point, right? If you think of the speed of transaction, the flexibility and agility it gives, right? I mean, that's the foundational capability for the next innovation stream, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I know, looking at the interim report that came out, as I say, that the Centre Bragg's regulator, and there's a quote in there from a member of the ASX who's involved in that the DLT, you know, replication of CHESS. And even that point is made about, you know, this is the future, this is the technology, this is the direction that we're heading in. And this is a good thing. This is to be embraced. And here's the thing too, like here in Australia, and I made this point earlier this week as well, that the community here in Australia is really strong and really vibrant. own digital assets, both from an entrepreneurial point of view, from the infrastructure that's there, the engaged community that's out there. Like, people are willing to work bloody hard to get this across the line for here locally. And I think that's something to be proud of. I know for me anyway, it gives me the energy to keep going and keep pushing it. But equally, I think things like that travel rule, where the AML KYC obligations are going to be the same as traditional financial institutions, there's a lot of comfort with that. And the conversations, as I say, when we're now talking to other financial institutions or big brand names, and we mentioned that this is coming in, you can see palpably their shoulders drop. Because great, okay, so I don't have to worry about it or take it to my risk committee. Do you know what I mean? That they're under the same as we, as financial institutions and other big banks. So there is a lot of comfort there. So for me, don't get me wrong, that is going to be an obligation and a burden that we're going to navigate through, and we've got to get there yet. But, you know, it didn't cripple the financial institutions, and it's not going to cripple us either. We're just going to find a way through. But it's going to be a bit of a learning curve for all of us.
Well, I think it's a good, you know, analogy would be to say we're growing up fast, right? We're getting through adolescence, and we're now starting to take some of the responsibility that comes with turning 21.
I was going to go more with 17, but
okay.
I'll take 21 too. Yeah, it's very exciting.
Well, Caroline, thanks once again for your time today. Very interesting. And, you know, what you provide is such a direct feed of information and insight into what's going on. It's really valuable. So thanks very much. We'll do it again soon.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.